What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast. Hopefully you can hear us both and see us both now, waving to ourselves on YouTube. So many people already introducing themselves in chat and the places that they're from. But first, I'll introduce my co-host, Benjamin Green. How are you, Ben?
I'm good, man. Pretty good weekend. It sounds like you're both playing a lot of League, which is always good. What's up, Pal, Vic, Tommy? Who else we got? Exceldro, Ta, hopefully I said that right. Sinister, what's up, guys? Good to see everybody here. Thanks for being here today. Yeah, Pete, how are you, man?
It's always awesome to see like so many people saying hi and introducing themselves in chat. I think that's been the biggest benefit of doing these podcasts live, just being able to get that instant reaction from chat and you know, their opinions on the hot pieces of Twitch talk, like new categories and all the kind of things that we're going to dive into this week. Yeah, my week's been good. I managed to get back over the weekend to see my family, which was really nice, something that I haven't been able to do for quite a long time. So yeah, not so much League lately, but thanks for dropping me in that. yeah, it's been good, but so much news this week. I feel like we say that every single week, but this week has been dominated by Twitch news. The amount of times I've wanted to like retweet something and I'm like, I'm gonna be spamming my followers by sharing this much Twitch news, because there is just an insane amount, I feel like. Where do you want to start? Like, what do you want to get going with?
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff, a lot of Twitch, which personally I'm always excited to talk about. But I guess we'll start with some of the new features that are coming to Twitch, which sure. There are a bunch this week. The first one that I saw was Chants, which got announced, I think, last week. Have you a chance to see that?
I've had a chance to see that. That's a real bad dad joke, isn't it? Come on, Pete. You're better than that. yeah, I did. So this is for people that haven't seen it yet. It's not fully rolled out yet, is it? It's just going to select communities now, but I feel like it's the bigger streamers that have seen this, so I wonder if it's going to partners first. But anyway, to describe the feature that for those that haven't seen it, broadcasters, so the streamer yourself and any of your mods, could now type /chant followed by a message, and then all viewers will sort of have a pop-up. I've actually got a screenshot of it here in this tweet thread, a pop-up like this, where they can just click the button chant, and your same message will be posted by them as well. So the idea behind it is that you can get your whole community to be spamming the exact same message. But it's only mods and broadcasters that can actually set up a chant. Not anybody can do it. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I don't know if I ever saw a reason to add this, but they've added it nonetheless. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the bigger streamers' reactions to it. But what's your first hot take for a spam?
I don't really have a hot take on this one, I think, unless maybe it is. I kind of think, why not? You know, it's not something that I think is a game changer, but it does kind of play into that meta where people tend to spam things when they get hype moments and that kind of thing on chat. Plus, it's controlled by the mod and the streamer. So I don't really see it being abused as long as you have good mods who aren't going to troll you that way. So I think it's kind of cool. I don't know how often it'll get used. Like, I kind of already forgot they added it, to be honest, because people just type without having a prompt. But maybe it's better for new users to get plugged in and start getting into like the Twitch culture. So I don't see a downside to it. Do you see anything on your side that's different?
The one thing I've thought about is that, remember life on Twitch before VIPs was a thing? A lot of big streamers made like big donators of theirs mods instead of VIPs, because VIPs wasn't their thing. So it was a way of showing appreciation to somebody that's like donated or been around for a long time. So I reckon there's a lot of big streamers that have hundreds of mods, some of which are just watching and actually not doing any moderating. And now they could abuse this, and they'd only be able to abuse it once until they got demodded, right? But they could, you know, spam their own social links or something much worse if they wanted to. And you know, if you're a streamer in the middle of a heated game, you might not look at chat for 30 seconds and then you look back and there's something that you don't want to see being spammed over and over again. So that's the only thing that I think, and that's kind of been backed up by a few of the big streamers. I think actually maybe in reply to this, yeah, let me go back to the screen share. So in reply to this thread, we've got like Ludwig and Miskiff both saying, let this feature be toggleable for the streamer, so let them enable or disable it, which would seem like a very, very easy thing for Twitch to do and probably please a lot of these big streamers that are worried about it being abused, potentially. Mm. But yeah, I think it's not such a big feature that it's going to have a polarizing opinion on it, really. But I also, you know, I kind of like that Twitch is like a hive mind when you have a big chat and you've got to try and understand the opinion from people spamming different things. So maybe if they're all spamming the same thing, then it, you know, it's a little bit easier to understand, I guess. But yeah, not the biggest feature, but I think maybe they're just trying to keep adding features to differentiate themselves from YouTube, and this is one of the ones that came from their ideas board that was super easy to implement.
Yeah, I think it just plays into the Twitch culture especially, and it should be toggleable. I mean, that's fair. I think any feature like that that is directly involved with the chat or the streamer can control should be an on-off type of thing, like predictions as well. If you don't want to use them, you shouldn't have to. But I still feel like, I mean, it's a relatively easy problem to solve if you just don't give mod people who shouldn't have mod or just go through and do an audit of your mods and then you have no problem there. So I personally think it's fine, but I don't know. I guess we'll see. People hopefully don't abuse it. We'll have to keep an eye on that one. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you go.
I was going to say the next feature that we saw was the follower emote got announced. So I think if I'm reading this right, basically there was a rumor they're going to add a follower emote for, I think, just one emote if you follow a channel, and then you get the rest if you would subscribe. So it's kind of like a teaser of the rest of your emotes, which I personally think is a super cool idea just to get people, again, into the sense of getting emotes for following and being part of a channel. I don't think it's actually been announced yet or released. It's just kind of a rumor. But on paper, this seems like a pretty cool idea to me. Do you have thoughts?
Yeah, so I found this because I started following this guy, Tayari, who I think was the guy that broke the brand safety score. He must be a developer that kind of looks at the Twitch API and any changes that get made to it. And because he does that, he can sometimes find features before they're announced. So he has found in the code base some new code for follower emote, which he thinks, and I probably agree, is going to be a feature where if you follow a channel, you'll have access to a single emote, which I guess is kind of similar to the channel points reward that you get. You know, if you've watched a channel for long enough, but you haven't subscribed, you can sometimes unlock a singular emote that normally subscribers would only have access to. So just an incentive to get people following channels, I guess. So from Twitch's point of view, they obviously want to encourage that. And I guess it's nice for streamers as well, because if you have a viewer that specifically wants to unlock the follower emote, then encouraging them to follow is one way of doing that. But yeah, again, it seems like a relatively small feature. I just wonder if it's going to impact anybody using those channel points, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it'll help with followers across the board, to be honest, especially if that one emote is pretty good. And, you know, just like sub emotes, people want to go get that emote, but it's so much easier to go get it if it's just a follow. So it could actually, if you use it right, it could be a pretty big boost, I think, to your channel and just across the board for everybody's follows. So yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I hope we see it come through.
I imagine you're going to, from the streamer's point of view, you're going to have the ability to choose which emote this is. And it's not just going to be a random allocation from Twitch, because that makes a lot more sense. And then you can start to really work out, you know, maybe there's an emote that you think gets used more often, which you could use to encourage more people to follow. But yeah, let's go into the third and probably the biggest addition this week, which is the 350 tags that Twitch is adding. I'll bring up the screen share again here, because they did do a blog post on this, effectively just stating that they're introducing over 350 new tags that streamers can use on their streams. So I know that for a very, very long time, the transgender community or Twitch community in general has been really asking Twitch to add that tag. It looks like Twitch has done probably the right thing in their head, which is to add that tag along with 350 others. So they're trying to cover all the bases that could possibly come out of this. Because I think if they just added the transgender tag, then they're just going to continually have new communities and new tags being requested from them. So I think they actually talk about in this blog post that they spoke to a number of different third party and independent organizations to be able to understand what kind of tags are going to make most sense for these different communities. So I know that there are some concerns here about like some of the race tags, but certainly like language tags, I hope that they're going to add them, because we don't actually have a list of the tags yet. That's the one thing that's kind of annoying, is they've said that they're adding the transgender one and a few others, but there's 350 here and they haven't announced the list. So I think that's going to come next week, probably with the actual release of the feature. But the one for me, it would be great if you could have more language tags, because as Twitch becomes this platform that is growing and more countries around the world are using it, and we keep looking at these like Twitch atlases and seeing all these new communities from around the world and different languages starting to use Twitch as a platform, it'll be really great to be able to differentiate them as a viewer, you know, search for those certain tags, mm-hmm. and as a streamer, so you can really, you know, does it help with discoverability? I would say yes, but probably nowhere near enough. But anything that you can do to differentiate your stream from the, what is it now, a million other streams that are on the platform,
right,
is probably a good thing.
Yeah, I think like in general, the more tags we can add, the better to help with discoverability. Just as a simple statement. Now, like you said, there are some concerns I've seen from people around that. I don't think they've released the actual tag list, so I don't know why we're getting so much criticism on this just yet. But people are concerned that if they have really specific tags around race or, you know, marginalized groups, that kind of thing, it gets really easy to target those groups from trolls and raids and that kind of thing, which could happen. I think they even mentioned in the blog post, like, that's kind of why they held off on doing this for a while. But I think it's still worth it, especially if Twitch does a good job moderating this kind of thing if it happens, because these communities have asked for it, right? So I think it, on paper, like, it's a win more than a loss. Now, it depends on how they roll it out, like what the actual tags are that they come out with next week. They have a stream, I think, on the 26th, which I imagine will go through the actual tags they're releasing and how they made the decision process and all that. So we'll see what that's like. But all in all, I feel like if people are wanting this feature, and it sounds like, you know, Twitch mentioned that the community really, really fought for this for a while. So I think it's cool to see them reward that and say, like, hey, we hear you guys and we'll give you that feature, despite the concerns that we have and that others have in the community.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a good thing at the end of the day. I think there is probably some use cases where it might get abused, but hopefully Twitch just clamps down on that quite quickly. And I'm glad that they've done 350 and they've gone overboard with the number of tags that they could add, because otherwise, like I said at the beginning, it's just going to be a constant barrage of a new group of people wanting a certain tag on Twitch. So hopefully now there's tags for days. I actually hope that they've added some like general tags as well, because I think there's a real lack of tags, like for general, yeah, like talk shows and podcasts and things like that. You can't really differentiate what you're doing. So hopefully it's more than just, you know, these tags that they've talked about with gender, sexual orientation, race, nationality, ability. But it's really good that they've added that. I think tags in general should be a bigger feature on Twitch. It kind of died down on YouTube and not used as much, but Twitch, like we've said so many times, live streams are harder to discover, so anything we can use to differentiate ourselves, I think, is a good thing.
Yeah, I totally agree. I would love to see more like content specific tags, and I think they mentioned in the blog post that they'll take new tag requests from people now on a more regular basis, so I hope that we see that. I would love to really niche down for like a specific game, for the type of gameplay you're doing or a position in a game, things like that, that can really help you find like that real exact type of content you want on the platform. Because I think like that's where the big difference on YouTube and Twitch is right now, at least from like the video side. I don't know that the live stream side is any better than Twitch right now, but on paper it could really help a lot with discoverability.
And there's nobody's forcing you to use these tags to like state your gender or race or anything like that. They're only there for people that want to use them. So I can see that some people are getting upset about it, but really, if it upsets you, just don't use them. There's no reason to use them. They're there for people that do want to use them and do want to, and for the viewers that want to be able to filter based on things like that. So yeah, let's move away from Twitch, because we've covered it for three topics and we've got way more to talk about Twitch later on in the show. Have you seen these new product announcements from Ava Media, and what are your thoughts? I know that neither of us, unfortunately, have been able to test them, but maybe that's not such a bad thing based on some of the early reviews.
Oh man, I really want these to be good. So for those who aren't aware of what came out, so Ava Media released two products. The first was potentially supposed to be like a Go XLR killer, which was combining the functionality of GoXLR with a Stream Deck, essentially, with a touchscreen, so that you could do everything kind of all in one system. And on paper, that sounds really cool. When I watched some reviews from people, again, I didn't get an actual copy of it, but from the reviews, it did seem to have some issues. The other one was a microphone they put out that kind of looks a lot like the SM7B, but like more gamery. That one, I also didn't watch. I didn't watch as many reviews on that one because I was less interested. But it also seemed like it wasn't quite there. The Nexus, Livestream Nexus, is the big one that came out. And that one, I think the biggest issues I saw were on the hardware side. Like, it could not power a lot of the mics, like especially this mic that people want for live streaming, and had a lot of distortion, things like that. So that, I mean, really, I think, limited it.
You say that the issues people had were on the hardware, but I think the software is just as bad.
That, like, too.
When you build a product that relies on hardware and software and neither of them win, like, maybe it's time to go back to the drawing board. I think, realistically, let's talk about some of the complaints, because a lot of people won't have seen this product. like you mentioned, meant to be a bit of a Go XLR and Stream Deck hybrid with this touchscreen portion and some soft touch buttons and controls for different audio sources. It looks cool on paper, and I think the idea is cool. Like, I'm glad that companies are trying to execute on an idea that's new and like a bit innovative. But yeah, from the reviews that I've seen, they just missed the mark completely. Like, I remember when the Go XLR came out, it was at TwitchCon that it was announced, and every Twitch partner got a little leaflet in their Twitch partner bag with information about the Go XLR.
Everybody, the entire everybody conference did. Got it.
It wasn't just partners. Okay, good to know. Yeah. And I just thought, oh, look, another RGB gimmicky thing, you know.
I did too.
they've slapped live streamer or gamer on it somewhere, and they're going to charge. I think at launch it was $400, right before China increased the tariffs for parts. But I thought this is going to be marketed towards gamers and absolutely rubbish, and people should stick with, you know, Focusrite 2i2s and Cloud Lifters and traditional audio hardware companies. And then when you look a little bit more into it, you see that it's owned by TC Helicon, and they've put a proper Midas preamp inside, and you start to see that they've actually cared a lot about the hardware inside. And even though it looks quite gimmicky, actually, this Go XLR can power the Shure SM7B without a Cloud Lifter. And this, by the way, this microphone that both Ben and I use, that's very popular on Twitch, is very difficult to power. It's a dynamic microphone, but it's particularly quiet. So a lot of streamers, if they're not using something like the Go XLR, will require something like a Cloud Lifter or a FET head, which boosts the signal effectively. But this live streamer Nexus, which Ava Media have released, is nowhere near capable of powering this mic or any real dynamic microphone that you can look at. So I did a video on the top streaming microphones for Twitch streamers. I think looked at the top 250 streamers. Many of them are using dynamic microphones, which are notably quiet. And you need to have like right up next to your mouth for that presence boost. And this live streamer Nexus doesn't look like it would be able to power basically any of them. It's a really, really odd choice of hardware that they put inside. I know in Harris's video, like he talks about how there's this window of gain that you basically have to have a microphone that sits inside. And not surprisingly, the microphone that they've launched with this, the Mic 330, it's called, I think does sit within that range, obviously, because they've kind of launched these two products together. But anything outside of that range is going to be either too quiet or too loud, because you can only control the gain of basically the software side of the gain and not control the actual gain of the preamp inside. So they made some bad decisions hardware side, and then I mean Ava Media software in general hasn't always been the greatest. I actually didn't mind the software that they released with their new camera, the PW513 or the live streamer cam 513, but yeah, it looks like this software is also pretty bad. So I don't know what you do at this point with Ava Media. Do you keep trying to push it and just hope that some people stumble across it and buy it and think that their microphone still sounds good, or do you take it off the shelves and just start again? I'd hope that it would be the latter.
I mean, it's tough because I know they've put out, somebody in chat was saying that they have put out a roadmap, which I did, Vic said this, they put out a roadmap, which is pretty comprehensive of how they want to change it. And they even, I think they were commenting on the video reviews on YouTube of saying like, here's how we're going to change this, and you guys can contact us, give us ideas. So they're very receptive to feedback. The problem, I think, like the software is one thing. You can always fix the software and solve it over time. But the hardware is you can't change that with a patch, right? Like that's going to have to go back to the drawing board and redesign it and probably change the price. And that's the whole piece. It's going to be a lot of work. So unfortunately, I think that is going to be what they really have to do to make it work. Now, if they can patch it up with some software and some digital changes, that could help a lot. I think they even mentioned they have like, there's 10 dB of digital gain that you can't disable or something. Just a lot of weird things on the digital side that could probably be cleaned up on the software as well as the function. That could help. But I mean, it's going to come down to like, can it power the best mics that the Go XLR can? Is it like a parity offering there? Otherwise, I mean, I can't really get it. Like, I'm in the situation, I don't have a Stream Deck or a Go XLR, so this is my dream device. But unless it can actually power this microphone and give me the same function, then I just can't get it right now, unfortunately.
And they had the advantage, I think, of you know, the Go XLR came out like 2.5, maybe 3 years ago now, like nearly. So you have the advantage of going second. And they did undercut it massively with price. Like, it's worth saying that this isn't the same price as a Go XLR. And in theory, the fact that it's got this built-in touchscreen Stream Deck, where you can like embed your chat and, you know, put whatever widgets you want, should mean that it's amazing. But I feel like they just cut money where they shouldn't have cut money, which is on the preamp. They need to make microphones sound good with this. Like, that is rule number one. And then you can worry about fixing the software. I really hope I get my hands on it, but maybe they just knew that I was going to be far too honest and decided, no, I'm sure it's not the reason. But yeah, I do want to get my hands on it because I like the idea. I really like that companies aren't just bowing down to Elgato and saying, you know, the Stream Deck is king. No one else can compete with that. They're actually thinking about ways of doing that. But it just really missed the mark. I think they've just cut too many corners.
Yeah, and I would still love, like, these are really cool features. I think the idea of combining a Stream Deck plus a Go XLR is really cool, but it's still not really original. Like, you're kind of just taking two existing ideas and putting them together. Like, I would love to see an actual original idea come out from one of these companies for a new type of product. Maybe it's all been done at this point, but still, I would love to see some of that. I know we also had the mic. We didn't talk about that as much, but from what I saw from that, it didn't really seem like anything special. It looks cool. It looks like it hangs pretty cool on your setup too, but it didn't really sound super great from what I saw. Pete, did you hear otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, again, reviews that I've seen about this is that it was like super noisy. It doesn't have a great shock mount built in, so you get a lot of table noise and breath noise. And obviously with a dynamic microphone, you want it close to your mouth. So yeah, I think this one also missed the mark. There was a good point pointed out in chat by Chumid Siegel, who said that roadmaps are great and awesome, but I'd never buy something with promises in the future, which I think is so true. Like, they can promise to fix the software and things like that, but you need to buy things based on how they function for you right now, rather than the promises of how they might function with updates in the future. But you know, hats off for them trying. I hope that it gets a revised model and they really think about the hardware behind the Nexus and making sure that it can power mics other than the one mic that they're selling with it. Or they're not even selling with it, but they're kind of accompanying in all the images. Because yeah, I like the idea. I think I've said that about 10 times, but they really missed the execution. Let's move on.
We'll keep an eye on it though.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Maybe if it ever works, I'll use it for one of these live streams and then we can compare audio quality between episodes. Let's move away from, I guess, traditional live streaming and talk about Twitter, because this show is about content creation as well as live streaming. And Twitter verification, that big tick that so many people want and I still don't have, and I would like it at some point. And it seems like they are rolling out a new way of getting verified on Twitter. So this isn't just how it traditionally was, where you sort of luckily opened your inbox one day and saw that you've been verified on Twitter if you're deemed important enough. They're opening up a new way where you're going to be able to submit an application to get verification through the app. And this isn't out now, but it looks like it's out in the next couple of weeks. And I think we had some rumors about this, but I don't know if we ever talked about it on the podcast. But yeah, I think the biggest highlight for me is that it looks like maybe content creators might be one of the eligible career types to be able to get verified. I've pulled out one of the quotes in our notes here that says, "Established digital content creators may be verified if they have consistently published original content, regardless of the platform, for at least 6 months prior to applying and meet the follower or mention criteria listed below for influential individuals." So it looks like maybe your favorite content creators might be able to get verified, but you don't really know what these numbers mean. Who's going to be able to apply for verification, and does it even mean anything if everybody gets verified?
Yeah, I don't think everyone's going to get verified. I dug a little deeper, and there is actually some specific stuff about basically influencers being partnered or verified on Twitter, which is kind of interesting. They're getting more granular with what you actually have to get verified now. I don't know if you can pull it up on the screen here,
Peter. Yeah, yeah, I can. Whereabouts are you looking?
That article I just sent you, if you scroll down a little bit, there's a table you'll see that pops up. Basically, you have to have used Twitter consistently in the last 6 months. You have to abide by Twitter rules. Don't post bad content, basically any aggressive stuff. And then the big one is the notability criteria at the bottom here. So you have to have one in column A and one in column B. Right there. Yeah.
I was just checking. I had the right table. Scrolling to see if there was any others. This is it.
Yep, exactly. And so they have really specific criteria. I guess you have to get one in the first column, one in the second column. And it's pretty specific. It's like having a stable Wikipedia article, a profile on Google Trends. Like, these are pretty specific things that you can go do, essentially. And then theoretically, you can apply for verification and get it once you have them. So kind of interesting. And it's the first time I think they've done like real concrete requirements for the program versus just hitting some level of notoriety and hoping that they accept you in the past.
So which one of us is writing the Gaming Careers Wikipedia article? Just let me check that before this launches.
Yeah, well, you can do any of those. It doesn't have to be that one. You could also have three more featured references within the 6 months prior in a news outlet. So whatever, we can get a bunch of news articles.
Define
too.
A news outlet. I mean, I probably do have a feature on a few low quality news outlets, but I think Twitter verification at the end of the day is just a tick. Like, as long as people can find you by your username. I mean, the real appeal here is that we need to get Ben's Twitter handle without the underscore, don't
yes.
we? I mean, underscore Benjamin Green doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, does it, Ben? So if you haven't yet followed Ben, then you need to go and follow him so that he can eventually demand the one without the underscore. Because I used to have, like way back, I used to have Gaming Careers underscore on Twitter and managed to just grow the account enough that I went through the process of acquiring the username because it was a dormant account anyway. But I mean, Twitter verification doesn't really mean anything. It's a bit of an ego boost, isn't it, at the end of the day? I think it's the same as like Instagram swipe up. You get like a tick next to your name, but not really much else. So
yeah, you get the new verified replies area or something, I've heard, which is big deal over there. No, I don't think it's a huge deal, but at least it's cool to see the transparency for it, because kind of like, this reminds me of when people used to apply for a Twitch partner and it was very vague, like there was no real requirements, and then they came out with these really specific goals you have to hit to actually get there, and same thing for affiliates. So I think it is kind of cool, and it gives you like actual goals to shoot for versus just like get bigger, more numbers, get verified, even though the actual goal probably isn't that important.
I mean, it really only makes sense if you're constantly being impersonated, in my idea. Like if somebody's made an account that looks like Elon Musk, but it's a different username, and then they're tweeting about a Bitcoin scheme that's going on. Like, for things like that, it makes sense to have a verified account, so it's really easy to notice which one the real one is. But I won't be crying myself to sleep if I don't get it. But I'll probably apply because I like the ego boost. Let's move on to talking about the thumbnail that we made for this week's podcast, the big topic. I think we've already covered it as a big topic, but there's constantly updates to it, isn't there? So we have to keep going with it, don't we?
Yeah, we're deep in the meta now, man. We gotta cover it. So I'm sure you guys, if you follow Twitch, you saw the many discussions about the hot tub meta of the last week and the developments that we had. So we covered the actual what's going on last week. This week, we got a couple updates. The first of which was Amaranth actually got blacklisted from getting adverts on her channel. Of course, she was actually not notified of that. She found out herself, and then, you know, kind of a storm brewed on Twitter when she let everyone know that it happened. And then after that, so we'll go through the events first, then we'll talk kind of through each one, I think. So after that happened, Twitch did eventually address it. And then like shortly after, they added a new category on Twitch, which is pools, hot tubs, and beaches, specifically for these types of streams. And they actually made a statement on like what they think about the hot tub meta. That's not just DJ Wheat on stream, but a formal blog post of kind of why they're doing this thing and what they think about the reports coming out. And then since then, it's been used in some interesting ways, but overall, that's the big updates. So again, we'll go through each piece of it, but Pete, kind of what's your thoughts seeing all this so far?
I think the key point that I want to emphasize here is that this has been, Twitch's hand has been forced by advertisers. And we like to think that we're as the community holding Twitch accountable, and it's been us that has requested this change. If you think it's a good change or not, we'll get into, but it isn't. It's come from the advertisers, because as you said, the order of events was Amaranth lost ads on her stream out of nowhere. She had no communication from Twitch. So a lot of people think, oh, okay, right, Twitch is going to make a post about hot tubs soon, and they're not going to be allowed on the platform because they've already cut money from the biggest hot tub streamer, right? But then they've gone the other way and basically said, hey, we think this content is fine for our platform, but some of our advertisers don't, and some of our viewers don't. So we're making a new category, which, as you said, is called, let me get this exactly right, I've typed it out enough times today, Somewhere in here. Here we go.
Pools, hot tubs, and beaches.
Pools, yep. Hot tubs, and beaches. So I don't know what showers or waterfalls falls under. Maybe you have to find a new category for that. I'm sure there's going to be people looking to exploit this with things like that. But essentially, by putting these types of streams into a single category, advertisers can opt out of advertising on that content, and viewers can opt out using, you know, the I'm not interested in this type of content feature. So they hopefully never see it again. And Twitch has said that they will be moving streamers that don't categorize themselves into this category, into this category. So if there's still hot tub streams that are in the just chatting category, Twitch staff will be moving them to this category because they don't want people getting around the loophole. But this has all come from advertisers. It's money. Money drives all of these decisions. And when advertisers don't want to advertise on this kind of content, Twitch needs to work out a way that they can choose that, but still keep their money, still keep them advertising on the platform. And this is their way of doing that. So honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if this category has very limited ads running on it. I don't know how many companies that are running ads on Twitch want their adverts running on these kinds of streams. But at least now they've kind of made everyone happy. Like, I don't think hot tub streamers can complain that much that advertisers don't want to advertise on their channels. At least Twitch have still said that those streams are fine. And then viewers who don't want to watch it can now just mark that they're not interested. And, you know, advertisers are happy. So I think it's quite a good decision, but it's just hilarious. It's just so funny how, like, they've made a dedicated category for it. Like, I don't think you could have told me at the start of this year that this was going to be a headline that we'd be covering on this, you know, incredibly serious talk show that we do every single week. I don't necessarily think it's that bad of a decision. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. Like, this happened because of the advertising. It was not really a response to people complaining about it in the community, because as long as the ads are running and, you know, the advertisers are happy, I don't think Twitch cared too much, because honestly, like, it's giving them a lot of viewership. Every time that I come onto an incognito account or a new account on Twitch, like, that's the top of the platform is the hot tub stream. And probably because it's just attracting attention and probably good retention on there. So, like, from a user perspective, I guess that piece makes sense. It's just interesting to see how it's all kind of gone down and how, like, thinking back to the DJ Wheat response, now this official response, and they've just kind of changed, like, the way they feel about it a lot. There were some really funny quotes in the article about, like, we will not act against someone because they are sexy or something from the Twitch article, which is just a great quote. But overall, I think, like, they're doing about the best they can with it. I will say on the Amaranth piece, who is the biggest hot dog streamer by far, she was demonetized. She was remonetized, but about 10% of her previous earning rate. She earned about like $1,000 a day prior to being demonetized. And now it's about $100 per day, which is still good money. But it just shows you that, like Pete said, there are probably less ads running in that category or different types of ads than what are in the rest of the platform. So I think that's the reason they did this, really, versus trying to give it one category. There have also been a lot of funny streams that have come out in, because we have a dedicated category for this now. So, like, Geralt of Rivia from The Witcher doing his hot tub streams, and lots of people doing, like, fake scam streams as well, which is a problem. So I don't think it's a perfect solution, but I guess they're trying to deal with what they can right now in the platform, and we'll kind of see what happens. I think there are still cases of people abusing this for sure who are in that category but aren't really doing any pools, hot tubs, or beaches, and just trying to abuse that category. So I still think we need an answer for that type of thing, and hopefully reporting will cover that. But overall, just really fascinating, like you said, to follow this, and we'll see if they keep updating it, if there are more categories that come out, what'll happen in the future.
Do you think, here's a question for you, do you think that Twitch will be preventing streams from this category reaching the front page for, like you said, new accounts or incognito accounts? It's the first time you're arriving on Twitch, because surely they don't want this, like, thumbnails from this appearing on their homepage of Twitch when there's a 13-year-old arriving at the platform. I would have thought that they would be doing that behind the scenes, but then, you know, do they then need to write into their terms of service? Because Twitch's whole stance on this is that it's not sexually suggestive. So from that point of view, they shouldn't be filtering out on their homepage. But I can also see that that's probably a decision that they are making.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely not, as of right now, they're definitely not filtering out for new users. Because even just this morning, I got logged out on my Twitch account and was on the page, and she was just right there on the front page, Amaranth at the top of the category. So they're definitely not, like, blacklisting this category from new users, unless it was just my rogue new account. But I think that kind of makes sense what they said in the article. And so it's just interesting to see how they'll change it. If maybe they do add like different types of filters and opt-ins for new accounts and start doing that kind of thing. Because it's so new, right? This category came out like 2 days ago. So that could happen. But as of right now, I don't think it is.
I think the other thing, and I've said this as my stance, like the last couple of podcasts that we've mentioned it, I still think gambling streams are a bigger problem. Like, mm-hmm. I logged into Twitch this morning and XQC was streaming, you know, him playing a slot machine for probably close to 100,000 people. And I'm thinking, surely that's more detrimental, you know, in this world. The amount of 14, 15-year-old people that look up to him, seeing him, you know, once in every 2 hours winning $40,000 or something. I think that's a much bigger problem personally, but we see way less uproar about it. I wonder if that's going to be a problem coming in the next few months. I think it should be, because I think personally that's got going to have a much worse effect on a lot of people. But yeah, you know, maybe we'll see a new category for that as well. It shouldn't be happening in just chatting again. Like, I think the just chatting category has encompassed too many types of content now, and you know, maybe we're going to see it all split out, and Twitch being really, really strict about which category you're streaming in, depending on the type of content. But
yeah,
we'll see, won't we?
I imagine we'll get a lot of new categories for sure, because just chatting is just a catch-all for anything. And then as more people do something, it'll kind of warrant its own category. I honestly am curious to see, like, the pools, hot tubs, beaches thing. If we look a year from now, will it even still be there? Will anyone still be using it? There's a lot of small categories on Twitch that almost nobody uses anymore that at one point they did. So that'll be interesting. But like the gambling stuff, I'm sure either it'll be a category or some sort of DMCA apocalypse type situation might come, because there's a lot more, you know, state regulations and laws and things involved on that side versus like the hot tub meta. So we'll see there.
Grant's just made a really good point in the chat here, saying, what's the difference between Twitch showing people gambling and ESPN having poker? And I think that probably is the hardest decision about this whole gambling thing, is where do you draw the line? Because a lot of people will think, you know, poker is a skill game versus these games that are just purely, you know, odds-based, like slots. But then, you know, if they ended up banning things like poker, then how does that differentiate from esports? Because that's a skill game where you're playing for money and prize pool. So there is, like all of these things, it's not just an answer that is polarizing. There's a sliding scale, and everybody will have their ethic line in a different position and think that, you know, what should be done is based on their point of view. And it's a difficult decision. I certainly don't envy people at Twitch that have to make these kind of decisions, because it's such a big platform now. So many people rely on it as a career or a hobby that pays a little bit of, you know, pocket change, that whatever decision you make, you're going to be upsetting people, whether it's about hot tub streams, about gambling streams, or even, you know, about what bit rate you're allowed to stream at. It affects everybody, so that every decision now has got people with a critical eye looking at whatever gets announced from Twitch. And yeah, you must be looking over each tweet that you send out as the Twitch employee, being like, yes, you know, what's the first response going to be? How are they going to rip me to shreds on this one? So yeah, a difficult one. But we're going to be following it, aren't we? Like you said, will this category still exist in 6 months' time? What new categories are we going to see open up? And what's Twitch going to look like in a year's time? It's certainly not what it used to be, which was a gaming streaming platform. But, you know, at the same time, we've got much better content out of it now, not just in terms of different categories, but like people actually have to be entertaining to watch them now, rather than 5 years ago when you just had to have a decent looking stream and be relatively good at the game. I feel like we're going in the right direction. It's just the variety of content that comes with that.
Yeah, I mean, these are also, I think they're growing pains of the platform, because they've made the statement they want to get beyond just gaming, right? Like, they're making a lot of efforts to get into sports and to music and all these different non-gaming categories. And when you do that, you're going to have people who try and push the line one way, and you're going to have to make a decision onto like, where's the line of the new types of content you allow up to a point, or do you allow everything? And so I think they have to go through some of this, and we'll probably see more things like this come out, whether it's gambling or hot tubs or anything else related to sports gambling and all sorts of stuff that'll come out, I'm sure. So we'll keep an eye on that, but I think it has to happen.
This next bit kind of ties into that, I think. Let's talk about it. Have I got the right topic up? Yeah. So another thing that these hot tub streamers were doing, and I think we use Amaranth as an example here, because there was definitely screenshots of that happening, was they were using one of the features that's built into the Twitch dashboard where you can email your subscribers. So you can kind of use it like a mailing list. And what she was doing, and I imagine others as well, was using this to promote other platforms like OnlyFans, which is definitely 18 plus. But she was potentially emailing people that just subscribed on Twitch who were 13 plus. Twitch has basically temporarily disabled this feature because of the abuse that it was going through, whilst they try and rebuild it from their same safety guidelines. So this was clearly being abused, and maybe that one example that I have is not the case and there was worse things going on. But in any case, if Twitch allows you to send emails directly to subscribers as a streamer, there should be some kind of scanning going on to see what you're sending through to them, right? There needs to be some safety guidelines there. So yeah, this has been temporarily disabled. This is a tweet from Zach Bussey, who obviously tweets a lot of the Twitch news that we cover. So very, very thankful for the service that he does and has noticed. So yeah, this email basically just got sent out to anybody that's used this feature in the last 30 days. So it wasn't talked about in a tweet or a blog post. And I've never used this feature before, but I know that streamers do use it. So they're hopefully rebuilding it and it's coming back. But that kind of ties on to the end of the hot tub meta, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I'm curious. This one's interesting because, like you said, I've never used this feature, and I don't think most streamers probably do. So I'd be curious to know how often this gets used. It's hard to say. I don't think this is a huge issue for a lot of streamers, besides the ones who were clearly abusing it in some way. And I don't think we have confirmation of like what the exact abuse case was. We have some reporting here for sure, but I'm sure we're not seeing everything that went out. I kind of wonder too if there's any like privacy issues around ways of opting out of this stuff, or if they need to actually check for a certain age verification to send out certain types of emails. I'm sure it's things around safety concerns. But just interesting, because again, I kind of always forget this is even a feature on Twitch, but it is cool. And I would actually love to see some more updates to it if you could use that feature for your subscribers and followers and things like that.
I think most streamers have a big enough social platform, like a Twitter or an Instagram, that's usually how they share any news with their audience, right? So
yeah,
it
could change the game. Like if you have like think of like an email list for your own stuff. Cause I think a lot of streamers don't think of an email list. I know you have one, Pete, but like most streamers probably do not use email at all in their stuff, when it's still a pretty viable way to market yourself and to keep up with your community. So it's interesting. And I think they could kind of revamp that if they wanted to at some point.
Yeah. I mean, there's people in the chat, Vic, saying that they didn't even know that this feature existed. So I think a lot of people are in that same boat. It's kind of hidden away in the dashboard, isn't it? But it doesn't exist for the time being. They say it's coming back. I wouldn't be particularly surprised if it never comes back, because I don't think Twitch is obliged to be able to do that. Like YouTube doesn't have that feature. There's no way for me to contact all the subscribers on YouTube. They want you to use community posts and things like that. So relatively minor issue. Let's finish off talking briefly about the local priced subs that we talked about last week. There's a little bit of question being asked about the workarounds that you can get with subscribing at a different country's tier effectively. So again, Zach Bussey has looked into this and basically found that there are ways of people pretending that they're from a country like Turkey where the subscription price is now lower, and basically using that to become a subscriber, even if they're from America or from Canada or from UK or any of the countries that haven't had their sub prices lowered. So interestingly, there's two sides to this tweet, because there's also a response from somebody who's spoken to Twitch about this, and Twitch is telling them that they're prepared for these kind of exploits, people using VPNs and things like that, so that there will be some blocks in place to make sure that people aren't just pretending that from Turkey or whichever country ends up having the cheapest sub prices just to be able to get subscriptions. But it's clearly not working completely right now, because as Zach shows in this screenshot, he manages to subscribe for just $1 to somebody, even though he's based in Canada, I think it is. So yeah, what do you think about this? This was always going to happen, wasn't it, when they announced the Twitch subs?
There's definitely people who try to abuse this with the cheaper method. And I think they put out a couple of statements saying that they will take action against this kind of thing, and they see it. Now, I don't know if you feel like you're playing a dangerous game and you want to try to get this cheaper rate, then that's on you. But it sounds like they're definitely aware of that being a potential abuse case. So I'd be really careful of doing that. And I don't think it will last super long if they have that option. Because, I mean, they're not going to let themselves just bleed money on subscriptions. If everyone starts doing this, they're just going to completely get rid of the program, I think. So I don't see this being a huge issue, but it is interesting to see. And it has launched, by the way, in a couple of different countries. I've seen people say it's like actually a pretty big game changer for how many subs they're getting, as well as people who are actually subscribing and just being able to do that now for the first time. So it's pretty cool. And I really hope it doesn't get abused too much, because on paper, I like the program a lot, especially for just making it more accessible. But hopefully people won't abuse it and kind of ruin it for everyone else in the meantime.
The only abuse I really see happening is if somebody works out some way of it costing Twitch a lot of money. Because, you know, Twitch is doing this 12-month rollout where they're helping creators through this period. With, you know, if they're getting a lot of subs from these places, then they're going to help even out the income that they would have got when the cost of a sub was $5 or the equivalent of $5. But it kind of spurs a thought for me that maybe does this mean that like the record that Ludwig just set for most subscribers is kind of going to be in its own voice? Like we might hit a new record, but then if 100,000 of those subscribers are from Turkey, where it's cheaper, then people are going to question how many of those are legitimately actually from Turkey versus, you know, because there's a big difference in money, and maybe the record isn't at all about money, and I'm just thinking from a monetary point of view, but it does, this change on the platform is going to affect so many records, I think, because it is going to be cheaper for people to subscribe, which is a great thing for people in countries like Turkey and Mexico and all the other countries that they're going to roll this out to. But it also means that these records are maybe more achievable. Does that make sense?
I think Zach Boosie had said something similar, that it's a lot easier to hit that sub goal all time if it's half the price as it was a month ago, which is definitely fair. And I think it is about the money, because if it were free to subscribe, then it would have been a lot higher, right? So it definitely has some value there. Now, I don't think that the sub records are that important, really. I think it's more about the actual income that creators are getting and whether they're ultimately, like after this transition period is done, if they're going to make more or less money, or if it's the same, that kind of thing. That'll be a huge turning point. But overall, I like the program, and I personally, like, if we lose a couple sub records for it, I'm okay with it. I'm not Ludwig, but I think it's better overall.
Wait, you're not?
Just give more. I believe it or not, people mistake me all the time for him.
I thought I got the biggest streamer on Twitch on to help me co-host. I've been scammed.
Oh, well, I could still be the biggest. You don't know. This Ludwig could be behind me.
There's still plenty of months left in 2021, isn't there? So let's, let's get you to 280,000 subs or whatever it ended up being the record.
Easy peasy. All right. I think it's time for a viewer question. So if you guys have questions, let us know in chat. We have a couple from last week as well. So I think we can start with one actually from someone who's in the chat right now, who is Height Above Sea Level, which is a great name, by the way. He said, how long do you think before YouTube viewers get used to tipping YouTube streamers and get used to that culture? So I think that's a good question on just YouTube culture. We've talked about how YouTube is just kind of newer and people don't quite have the same culture on YouTube viewership as they do on Twitch side for emotes and subbing and tipping and just how much support there is on Twitch for that kind of thing versus how it is on YouTube. It's a good question. Pete, I'll throw this one to you first. Do you have thoughts?
Yeah, so this was a question actually from last week that we caught in the VOD, didn't we? It's good to see the same user in chat again this week, so thankfully we're able to answer their question. But it's a good question. We wanted to tackle it to start us off. It's difficult. I feel like that's a phrase that I keep using, it's difficult, but how does YouTube build that culture? It's not something that just comes about by slapping join buttons on and slapping super chats as a feature. You have to build it into the community's understanding, and it's something that Twitch has done that's really impressive and is difficult to replicate on a different platform. That being said, every year YouTube creators and streamers are earning more and more money, so people are slowly coming around to it. But to give a time estimate, I mean, I don't know how you end up getting there, because YouTube, for so many people, is a free platform where you watch an ad before a video and that's it. And that's, I guess, your form of payment. I think the number of people that subscribe to YouTube Premium, which used to be called YouTube Red, is minuscule. I mean, I do, but that's because I'm on YouTube literally all day, every day. But I think it's a really small amount. So yeah, getting people to actually enter card information into the YouTube platform isn't something that happens by default, and it seems to happen much more easily on Twitch. Now, I think Twitch has that advantage of Amazon Prime and people getting free subscriptions, so they kind of get the understanding of what it's like to subscribe to somebody without having to pay because they already subscribe to Twitch Prime. So it's kind of a difficult one. How does YouTube get people to start feeling part of that community and subscribing to somebody without necessarily having to part with your cash? They could add a free sub with YouTube Premium or something like that, but yeah, they need to think of ways of incentivizing the general user base on YouTube, which is much, much bigger than Twitch, into starting to support creators through super chats and what do they call them, memberships on YouTube. So yeah, not really an answer. I couldn't give a timeline, honestly. I think it's going to be a tough job for YouTube to achieve.
Yeah, it's tough to really give a timeline up because, like you said, it's so much that the culture from Twitch has been built up over the last decade. I think especially around monetization, with Twitch Prime being such a good way to get your foot in the door. Like, that's the easiest way for a lot of people to start giving money to a stream without really having to give anything themselves. And then I think from there, it gets easier to give bits and subs that are paid and things like that. So it's tough without having that initial foot in the door on YouTube. But I think it's also like Twitch did a lot of things for the first time on their side. They were the first ones to really do the paid subs on the channel, and the whole alert ecosystem and how that all went was really kind of built into Twitch culture. So maybe YouTube needs to add their own versions of that are kind of specific to the platform. I think memberships are kind of similar, but they could do some more around specific YouTube features for that kind of thing that would probably get used more. Anytime that you're mimicking the original, I don't think you're going to get quite as much success as the first platform. But that said, I think there's still, like, YouTube live stream is making a lot of progress with their emotes that we talked about recently, and new ways to support super chats and things like that. So I think we'll probably get close. I don't think they'll ever get to the same level as Twitch is with just how ingrained that is in the culture. But I think, like, in the next year or two, we'll see a lot more of that get common if they kind of keep on the same track that they're on right now. That's my own side on that.
I think we've covered that one quite well. The same user also asked if we discussed Twitter Blue, which we did cover last week's episode. So for anybody watching or listening, I am leaving the live stream VODs of these episodes on the YouTube channel. So if you just go to youtube.com/gamingcareers, you scroll down a bit, there's a playlist of all of our live streams unlisted, so you can go back and watch previous episodes. Or if you prefer the audio versions, obviously they're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and like 35 other different platforms. So yeah, go back and listen to our thoughts on Twitter Blue. Maybe we just cover one more question today, just to tie us off. Atreya asks, I'm curious what it will mean. I think this is talking about the local sub pricing and how it's cheaper now to subscribe in different countries. I'm curious what it will mean for things like unlocking new sub emote slots when it is currently based on the number of people subscribed. Will it become the value of subs instead? Yeah, that's a decision that Twitch has to make, really, isn't it? Because a lot of things are based on how many subs you have. We've seen actually previously that even partner contracts are based on how many subs you have. So if you have, I think the rumor going around was like, if you had 500 subs for like the last 3 months on average, you could then negotiate with Twitch maybe a better contract than a 50-50 split. But when we're now not talking about a sub always being $5 or $4.99, and we're getting all these new prices that are going to be coming through right now, just Mexico and Turkey, but over the coming 12 months, we're going to see, I'd imagine, dozens of new countries being added to that. Is it going to move away from number of subs and into a more monetary metric? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's tough to say because it's a good point. Like, people, if you have half the price of a sub in one country versus the other, then it's a lot easier for that one country essentially to get to a certain emote tier of subs. So I think
it's easier, but it's also should be reflective of what that value is in that country, right? Right. So it's also just as difficult.
Well, that's what we're saying, is if they keep it to just like number of subs, essentially. Okay, I get what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, it should kind of balance out, right? It's interesting. I feel like they can probably keep it the same based on that. Like, if it is supposed to be equivalent for the cost of living for each subscription, then it shouldn't really matter too much. I think you're right. And I think, honestly, they'll probably be too lazy to change it, if I'm being honest about it. So I don't think they'll change that too much, because I don't think they don't count like tier three subs as anything special right now for that, do they? Maybe.
No, I'm not totally sure. I don't think so. I think that's such a good question that it stumped both of us, basically. And Twitch is going to be the one that makes a decision. It's probably going to come down to how many people are ending up hitting insane new numbers based on having an audience in a country that can build, you know, a strong subscriber base, even if it's not a particularly expensive subscription. So, yeah, will we see Twitch? I don't know. I don't think for remote slots and things like that. I think they'll just stick that with number of subs because they can't really... I mean, it's not costing them anything to do that. But for partner contract negotiations, I think maybe they will go down the monetary route.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think that will probably do it for this week. We've covered our usual sort of time slot. Again, so much news, but it's always great to share it with all the people in chat. So thanks for all the kind messages and people that have participated. We're going to always try and, I think, start each podcast by hyping up a few people in the chat, aren't we? Introducing a few people. So get in here early. Let us know where you're joining from. And I think we'll catch you next... Oh, no. It's a good point. I was about to say we'll catch you next week. But next Monday is a bank holiday. That's what we call it over here in the UK. You guys call it a national holiday. Is that right? Or they all have like certain names, holiday. Don't they? Every Monday there that's a holiday has like a... It's named after something. But anyway, the point being... Next Monday is a holiday for both Ben and I. So we're actually taking a break next week. We won't be around. So 2 weeks' time, which is the... Bring up my calendar. The 7th? Is that right? Have I got that right?
That's
the 7th of June will be our next show. Obviously, I'll be putting up the YouTube link ahead of time. So just keep notifications on. Keep yourself subscribed if you aren't already. And I'll have a new video hopefully dropping tomorrow. Talking about some Twitch advice, some bad advice, actually, I'm going over. So if you aren't yet subscribed to the channel, definitely stick around and check out the channel again tomorrow when hopefully this video should be live. But thanks, everyone, for joining the podcast. Thanks, Ben, for joining me as always. And we'll catch you in 2 weeks' time on the 7th of June. Peace.
Thanks, guys. See you.